Mr. David Butler, Reel 8. Now, was there anything else about the Vanguard? You know, because you're coming to the end of your second year, because you finish on a.
I think
on
one of the most. In actual fact, I think one of the most memorable things that I finished on the Vanguard was that I was born on the 26th of February, 1935, in Warwick Hospital. Alongside of me, in Warwick Hospital, was a chap by the name of Ray Avery. We used to call him Monk. That was his nickname. Now, him and I joined the Navy together. He went to Devonport as a rating, and I went to Portsmouth. And the reason I went to Portsmouth was because I'd got relatives in that area. When we paid off, when the Portsmouth division paid off the Vanguard to the Devonport division, Monk Avery came on board as part of the ship's company, and I was just coming off watch at the time, I can remember it, and I said, "Well, no, Monk, what are you doing here?" "Oh," he said, I'm coming to join, take over." He said, "We're taking over, the Devonport division's taking over," he said, "the Vanguard." I said, "I know you are." Well, as it happens, Monk Avery, we were school friends and we were lifelong friends, he took over my locker, my hammock space, and my job. And that was all just per chance. And it was something I shall never ever forget. And the poor bad lad died when he was 49 years of age.
Right, now what about, was the whole company left the ship, did they?
End of commission for the Portsmouth ratings anyway. I think we had a train back all the way to Pompey. I think we all, either that or we went on leave, I can't remember.
Were you sorry to leave her?
Yes, I was actually. It was a good ship. We had some chaps in MS. There was Alf Peach, George King, Albert Kingston, he was from Hull. All older than me, a lot of them had come from one ship. They used to be on the HMS Birmingham before they joined the Vanguard, and there was five of them in MS, and there was a real good set of lads, smashing.
You got on with the lads generally well.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about the rest of the ship? Was it not just a stoke? Did you mix? There's always this thing that stokers and sailors don't mix. Did you mix with them?
Not all that much. I think we mixed with the Marines more than anything. It was just some of the tagged along. I was on one ship saying we mixed with the greenies, which was electricians. Yeah, no, we didn't really. There were so many of us, and we all had our own little... You had your own little sections of the ship, you see. And you did meet different people, and you went ashore, and you had a drink with them, and whatever, but you didn't really sort of socialise.
But there was no antagonism?
No, I don't think so.
What about your NCOs, your petty officers, your leading seamen, that lot?
Your leading and your sea live with you in the mess. The petty officers was all right.
Well... How did they treat you? I mean, were they reasonable?
Yes, they was reasonable. We had none of this, what you have nowadays, bullying or anything like that. I mean, the chap who my PO was in the boiler room and looked after it, he'd just been made a brand new PO. He hadn't long left the mess, the lower deck, as you might say, to be a PO before I joined. And in them days, you didn't get a peak cap when you first became a PO. You stayed for 12 months in your naval uniform. You're like a leading engineer. Everybody, everyday uniform. You didn't get a peak cap, nothing. You had to spend 12 months, and he was still in that rig when I joined the ship.
And he was a decent bloke.
Yeah, he was. I had a couple of words with him, but I think you have a couple of words with anybody at some time or another when you're working together all the time.
So it was not fairly relaxed discipline or strict, or how was it?
It was strict. You had to behave yourself. You couldn't do just what you thought you were going to do or anything like that. You had to behave yourself. But it was fair.
Now, what about the officers? Did you have much contact? What were they?
No, we had very little contact with the officers, but the engineers that I found all right. I found the engineers all right. As good as gold.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, they were sociable. They come down here. You'd done your job and they'd done theirs. And if you stepped out of line, they told you about it. And they report on you. I found that the reporting that I got was fair. There was a couple of officers throughout the Navy that I didn't get on with, but I think you'll always get that anyway.
Now, she was a happy ship for you, but what makes a happy ship for you?
The captain. How the captain and the commander or the first lieutenant run the ship. And obviously the lads have a big say in the matter, but if you've got antagonism in the ship, then it'll spread. But I think the captain and the officers make the ship, because how they treat you is how you respect them.
And it was good there. Who was the captain? Do you remember who the captain was?
No. I'll tell you who the admiral was. Sir George... Oh, Christ. Now, the name's gone out of my head.
It's all right. I mean, it wouldn't make much
sense.
I presume you didn't see much of him.
Oh, no, he told me to get a shave one day. He did.
Now, when you left her, you went into Portsmouth again, into Victory.
Yeah.
But it looks like a week.
Yeah.
So, nothing happening there?
No.
So, what was your next posting?
HMS Diligence.
As a stoker mechanic?
Yeah.
And what was HMS Diligence? I don't know that
one. It was an inshore minesweeping shore base. Inshore minesweeper shore base. Before you speak to me, and if you...
It's on, carry on.
If you go from Southampton to the Isle of Wight, Cowes, you'll see it on the right-hand side. Just up across the water from Southampton.
Now, as a shore station, it was... Now, what was it for?
It was to provide crews and maintenance for inshore minesweepers. But it consisted of three camps. The main camp, down where the captain had his office and what have you, was where the inshore minesweepers used to berth. They was anchored out, and where the maintenance was done. The camp just up the road where was the living quarters for the ship's company. Because the ship's company was actually did HMS Diligence, but there was also a crew's sleeping quarters for the inshore minesweepers in the main base. And then up another road was the officer's wardroom, where the officers lived.
Now, I'm not quite sure where it is. So
it's opposite Southampton.
It's in Cowes.
No, it's in the New Forest.
Right, so it's in Hampshire.
It's in Hampshire,
and
it's near Fawley. It's near Fawley.
Fawley.
Faw. The oil place, the oil refinery. Fawley oil refinery.
Of course.
It's there's Hythe Village, Dibden Paloo, and then Fawley, and it's just off. There's a ferry. There used to be a ferry from Hythe across to Southampton.
Now, why did they need stokers? I mean, were you going to be part of the crews?
No.
You're part of the shore base?
The transport section that they used to have there was run by stokers, but I had an ideal little job. I used to look after the domestic boilers in the ship's company living quarters and the officer's wardroom. And I used to look after these boilers. I was allowed to walk around the village in overalls with a cap on. And I used to crew from the ship's company up to the officer's mess and back again. I had three boilers in the ship's company living quarters to look after. And I had one in the wardroom. Now, if we used to have to take all our meals in the main base down the road. And then we used to get changed into what they used to call number 8 uniform. But I had a little bit, and I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and stoke the boilers up in not relight them, just bring them back to life from where they'd been dozing overnight in the ship's company thing. Get them working and get them ready for the hot water and the heating and that. Then I'd up to the wardroom and do the same with the one single boiler. Up the wardroom, and then I'd come back then and get washed and changed and go down and have my breakfast, and then about 10 o'clock I would then stroll up to the wardroom and clean their boiler. Clean their boiler out of clinker and ashes and one thing and another. And then I'd come down and do the ship's company ones. And then it would be lunchtime. And then I used to do the same. Then I used to go up to the officer's wardroom about 4 o'clock and make sure that they had plenty of fire going for when they came up to take the baths and one thing and another. And then come down and look at the thing. Then it was supper time. And then I used to do them again, look after them then, put them to bed at 10 o'clock at night.
Now that sounds like a cushy number compared to...
That was an extremely cushy number. An extremely cushy number.
And you're doing this from October 54 to October 55. Now, any stories, or I mean, because there's not much to tell duty-wise.
Not really, no.
It's just a civilian job almost.
Well, yeah, well, the only story we had is that at the... Now, this bloke, the story I'm going to tell you now, this bloke I met 3 times through my career, and it wasn't until we left the Navy... And he goes to our reunions that we have now for HMSO that I got to like the bloke. But when he was in the Navy, in his uniform, he was a pig's orphan. He was so hated by everybody. Now, he used to be on the main gate at...
What was he?
He was a petty officer gunnery bloke. And he used to be on the main gate at HMS Diligence. And because of our job, we was always allowed to wear number 8, which is like what you're wearing now, in actual fact. Light blue shirt, dark blue trousers. And our job, but he used to say, where's your... Now, when you went down for a meal, you see, in the evenings, you had to wear number 3 uniforms in the winter, but you could wear half in the summer, which was navy trousers, and a white front, the old white front with the blue band around the collar. And they, but I always just, we always was allowed, because of our job, to wear number 8s. And he always used to tell us, and we always used to have an argument. But at 10 o'clock at night, he used to take over the gate house up in the living quarters, where he lived up there. He lived up there. But he used to have to do the gate overnight if he was on the night shift. And we used to run rings around him. Because he was so strict and so pusher that he couldn't see. We used to lock him in. He'd walk round, do his rounds, and then all of a sudden he'd find there'd be a cat or a pig or something running around in the block, and there was always something running around that shouldn't be running around, or his bike had gone missing or something like that. And I met him, as I said, three times in the Navy, and I never did like the bloke until we got to the reunions, and he was a different bloke altogether. Yeah, but we used to play him up somewhat awful. If we could do it to Darby Allen, his name was, if we could annoy him, we did, because nobody liked him. Nobody. I mean, you come back at 1 o'clock in the morning. You come back at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you'd probably be carrying your cap. It'd make you wait outside the gate while you put your cap on properly to walk through it. I mean, so petty, and it was in a village. Yeah, but Darby Allen.
Anything else about that year?
Not really.
It's only a year, isn't it?
Yeah, not really. It was a good little bit. It was a good thing. I can tell you now. There was 2 of us on the job, and I used to work Monday. I used to work from about 2 o'clock Monday afternoon till 8 o'clock Thursday morning. And then I used to catch the 9:30 train from Southampton up to Leamington Spa for the me weekend. And then I'd catch the 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock back, catch the 10 o'clock back from Leamington on a Monday, and arrive back on the base about 2 o'clock. And then by then, the other bloke had left the morning. He used to make sure that the fires were all right for the morning, and he'd caught the morning train to wherever he was going.
Now, you weren't meant to do that.
We was 24 on. I was on a ship, but you started, say, at 8 o'clock one morning until 8 o'clock the next morning, and then he took over. But because of this little routine that was engineered long before I got there, this is what we used to do there. So I said, right, fair enough, I shan't break the mould. And that's how we, and that was it. And it was, because you could get a train, we used to get the Liverpool train from Southampton, and 4 hours later you was in Leamington Spa. It's quicker than what you can do now.
Now, what was your next posting then? You went back to Victory for the usual, well, it's a bit longer, it's nearly 6-7 weeks that time. I don't know whether you remember that one.
Yes, went there because I'd got a draft to HMS Newcastle in the Far East. And so I went there to get me all my tropical gear, get all my injections, and stuff like that. But it was still a boring job. Every morning you'd be given, you know, you'd fall in outside the Frobisher regulating office, and the chief stoker would come out and say, "White, so-and-so good to this job, and so-and-so good to that job." But, you know, you still had to have your injections and everything. Now, and that's why I went there.
So, did the vaccinations have an impact on you?
The one I didn't like, although it never worried me after about 30 seconds, was the yellow fever. That seemed, when you had that, it seemed as if it burnt as it went in. It was ferocious. But all the rest of them, it was no problem. I've never had any problems with injections.
And then I presume that this posting was cancelled.
That's another story. Right, and then one morning we was waiting outside, and this is the particular morning, we was waiting outside it was the Thursday before we was due to fly out to Singapore, and we was going to be, HMS Newcastle was going to be the first ship that was going to be fully complemented by air. Some of them have already flown out, and we'd flown out with BOAC from Stansted. And anyway, this particular morning, we was all lined up, and the captain and the chief stoker come down, and he, if there was anything going, like drafts or anything, he'd call your name out or he'd tell you the information. And this particular day, he was asking for volunteers who had not got a draft yet. To volunteer for the Royal Yacht, what's it just been?
It's gone out of my head.
Yeah, we both know. The Royal Yacht, anyway. And they asked for volunteers. And there was a chap next door to me, I can't think of his name now, but he come from Brighton. And we'd joined up together, and we'd been on the Vanguard together, and we'd been to Diligence together. And he said, "I'm going to put my name down." I said, "You can't." I said, "We're going on the Newcastle. You got your draft chip for the Newcastle." And he said, "Well, I'm going to put my name down anyway." So he went and he put his name down. And he never went on the Newcastle. He went on to the Royal Yacht, Britannia. He went on to the Royal Yacht, Britannia. And so that was that day. The next day, I got sent for and they said, "You're joining the Newcastle." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, I've got your papers here." He said, I got sent up to this engineer's office, and he said, "You're going to the Newcastle?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, we've got a problem out there." He said, "There's a chap on the Newcastle, who's a chap in HMS Terror, who's stolen some money." He said, "And we want him to take your place on the Newcastle, and you go to HMS Terror." He said, you've got exactly the same qualifications as him." And I said, "Yeah, all right." I said, "I'll volunteer for that, sir." "No," he said, "I want you now to go home and ask your wife." Stop.
You got married while...
Whilst at HMS Diligence, right. Yeah. And he said, "And while I was in... while I was in HMS Victory on this stint, my wife gave birth to a son, my eldest son." So, and he said, "Well, no," he said, "I want you to go home," he said, "and talk it over with your wife," he said, "and come back and tell me on Monday morning." So I said, "Well, I'll tell you now, sir, she'll want to go." "No," he said, "I can't accept that. You've got to go home and talk to your wife."
Now, why? What was so special about HMS Terror?
It's a shore base in Singapore, and it would have meant married accompanied. So I said, righto. So I went home and I spoke to Pat, she said, yes, I'd love to, blah, blah, blah. And I went back and on Monday morning, and I was flying out Monday night. And I went back to him Monday morning. I said, yes, sir, we'd love to go. He said, well, you realise she can't come out there until you're 21, he says. And that's in February, isn't it? And I said, yeah. And he said, right. He said, well, you'll be all right from October. And I said, yes, sir, I'll be all right, sir. I said, I can have a good look around and one thing or another. It'll give me time to see where to live and what I think. Righto, he said, I'll make all the arrangements. So I flew out with the HMS Newcastle Ships Company. And when I got to when we got there, I was taken into HMS Terror, and they went to their part of the barracks, and I went down to the regulating office, and told where to go and sleep for the night after we got there. And when I went next morning to the regulating office, they said, "Oh, you'll be working with the reserve fleet." They said. I said, "Okay." You'll be working with the reserve fleet, they said. So go and see Lieutenant Spacey down at the admin block. So I walked down across down towards the sports fields where the admin block was, and this Lieutenant Spacey, Vic Spacey, was there, and he said, "Oh yeah, come on." He said, "Well, you better go down." And he introduced himself, and we had a chat, and he said, "Well, you better go down to the reserve fleet," he said, and see the Stoker Petty Officer down there. He said, "You'll find yourself a job." So I went down there, and the Stoker PO, he said, "Yeah," he said, "I've got just a job for you." He said, "You're going to work on the Kanawa." I said, "What's the Kanawa?" He said, "It's an old Japanese warship." He said, "It's a firefighting school, K-A-N-A-W-A. He said, "It's a firefighting school." He said, "And you'll be working with Shipwright Sanderson."
So you were part of the firefighting school staff?
Hold on. There was only the chief there at the time. There was only the chief. There was only me and him all the way through, this Chief Sanderson. He said, "So go up to the diving school," he said, "and he's got an office up there." He said, "And have a word with him and tell him I've sent you up and you'll be his partner, his assistant." I said, "Right you are." So I went up there and I seen George Sanderson. And he said, "Great." He said, "But we're also now, we're going to get organised a painting school." He said, "You see that old turret that's over there?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, that's going to be our little painting demonstration place." He said, "The painting school." So that was okay. And I enjoyed it out there. And then I found out something. After
what were your actual duties then?
With the firefighting school, it was ships would come into the harbour, and the engineers or the captain or the commander or whoever it was on board used to say, "Right, whilst I was having a refit mainly, or doing that, they was in harbour for quite a while, they used to send them up to us." To go to do firefighting lessons on board the ship, flooding, fire, fighting fires, all sorts of things which you do in damage control.
Now, what were you doing? Were you actually operating machinery?
I was getting all the stuff ready for them: the fire trays, the extinguishers, the hoses, making sure that they had enough chocks and blocks and all sorts of things. Anything that's to do with fighting the fire, I used to have to prepare and get it all ready for them. And I would even set the compartment that it was going to be in. It just wasn't in any compartment. It was whatever. I might even have taken a ladder down that they'd got to put back up again. Or I'd put a twisted one up and they'd have to change it or something daft like that. And George Sanderson used to have them, and he used to tell them what he wanted doing and everything, and then put somebody in charge of it, of them. And then they used to do it. And then if they couldn't put the fire out, I was always there on standby to do it for them or show them how to do it and things like that. And that was it, basically. And to keep the ship, once again, clean and tidy. Because it all had to be cleaned up once I'd finished. and sweep the water, because we was able to flood it and that, you see, because it was afloat. And we was able to flood it and one thing like that, and see that the pumps was working. But then you had then it needed cleaning up. The fire extinguisher needed refilling. That was all my mundane job, as you might say. But then I also got a little job of motorboat driver for the CNC.
Now, which CNC? The CNC...
CNC Far East Fleet. George Scott Moncrief. Admiral Scott Moncrief. And if ever he wanted his green... His barge, we used to call the Green Parrot, because it was always green, and it had Gardner diesels in it, three Gardner diesels. And, of course, being an AWK man, that qualified me to look after it, you see.
Now, were you actually driving it?
No, looking after the engines. He had a coxswain. He had a coxswain that used to live in his house, and he was his chauffeur as well. And he used to steer the boat, but I used to do the engines and keep them clean and that. And so if ever he wanted a trip, see, it was on number ones. I used to have a car take me down to the dockyard, down to the docks in, or his house in Singapore. Sometimes it was the docks in Singapore or his house. And then make sure the boat was ready for sea. Or if it was going on a party, a banyan, what we used to call a banyan, which was a picnic on one of the islands, he used to say, "Well, bring the family." And so we used to do that. And I used to take the family out on probably a Sunday or something like that, whatever the case may be.
Did you see much of Moncrief, Scott Moncrief?
No, not a lot.
Did you enjoy that work?
Yeah, I did, actually. I used to enjoy it because it was... He had a Chinese crew. His crew was Chinese. And that was basically it. And then we got in the meantime of doing the firefighting things and that, we had the we started the paint spraying school.
Now tell me about that briefly. I mean, because
we had to get it built. When I say built, it was just pieces of wood put up, and then sheets of metal put on it, put onto these poles, and they was fitted in round. In other words, if it didn't rain, you see, in the day. Didn't rain until about 5 o'clock at night. It was just one of them sort of temperatures, them climates. And then we used to teach the lads. Now, who taught me, I don't know. But we used to teach the lads how to paint. The bush marks and things like that. And how to get the airs. You know when the airs come out of the bush? How to get it off without too much bother. And then I had to learn then how to spray paint. Because I had to do all this, put all this gear together and get it, and then teach them how to spray paint. If George was away, it was down to me. And that was good. I enjoyed that. And I then got a Malayan labourer to help me out in that job, because a lot of it was, it used to clash with the firefighting. Because sometimes, you know, they'd send up two classes at once. And HMS Newcastle, not the cruise, the cruise after hours, I was on one, and then the next cruise came up, and they came up for firefighting, and we failed the lot of them. And their commander came up, and he was not very friendly towards us, until George told him exactly what his place, people, had, he thought of his people, and their attitude and everything to it. And he said, "Well, why?" He said, "We have never had..." He said, "I think, sir," he said, "it's because you've had such a good year." He said, "What do you mean we've had a good year?" He said, "Well, you're cock of the fleet, aren't you?" Now, the cock of the fleet, you see, is some... They're allowed to put a cockerel on a stick.
Which ship was this?
HMS Newcastle, the commission after the one I should have been on. They had attained themselves as cock of the fleet in sports, seamanship on board the ship, and all sorts of things. It comes into this cock of the fleet, and they're given a point system, and they have it all. It happens in Hong Kong, it happens in the Philippines, and all sorts of different things happen. And that won the cock of the fleet, you see. And so nobody could touch them. They was the bee's knees, and they thought they'd carry on up our firefighting school as the bee's knees, you see.
And they hadn't tried hard enough.
And George hadn't. He'd, and he made, and well, the commander went back and told the captain, And the captain said, well, you'd better sort it out, or words to that effect. And they sorted it out, all right, because he cleared lower deck, and he marched them all the way up to the firefighting school. And then he said, you see these two men? He said, that's a chief petty officer. He said, and this is a stoker mechanic. He said, they are your instructors in firefighting. And he read the word out for them. And then he marched them all the way back. And then they all had to come through again.
And they passed.
And they all passed. Yeah. And that made me, well, we left over there.